you could argue, and a lot of people do, that Alaska would be a very different place today if it weren't for a little old man who lives in a little brown house in Anchorage.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Tom Marshall.
Nice to meet you.
Tom Marshall is 91. On a charm factor scale of 1 to 10, he is about a 12.
You know, I've never let my whiskers grow until just a couple weeks ago. And I don't care if they make me look younger or older. I like to pull on them. I think it pulls thoughts out of your head and down to your mouth. And I think you can think a lot better.
Marshall's living room is like your grandparents' house. His walls are chock-a-block with photos and knickknacks to remind him of the old days. And then there are the awards.
What does it say? For extraordinary foresight.
For professional discernment and courageous foresight. So
Marshall's extraordinary foresight set in motion the search for an extraordinary oil field in Alaska's Arctic. And today, Alaska is an oil state. But it wasn't always, and it almost wasn't. Hello and welcome to Midnight Oil. I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh.
And I'm Zoe Sobel. We're reporters with Alaska's Energy Desk. Midnight Oil is our new podcast, all about the 800-mile oil pipeline that shaped Alaska as we know it. Ever since the first barrel flowed down the Trans-Alaska Pipeline on June 20th, 1977, Alaska's fortunes have been tied to oil.
On this episode, it's hard to imagine now, but Alaska nearly lost out on the discovery of the century and the billions of dollars that came with it. Stay tuned.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. AYOGA is celebrating 40 years of Alaska's grit and determination that made Prudhoe Bay and the Trans-Alaska Pipeline possible. Find more history at ourakspirit.com with additional support from NPR Story Lab.
When Alaska finally became a state in 1959, it wasn't long before it was almost broke. The state was propped up with money from the federal government and a few natural resources.
Gold mining is a valuable industry, but Alaska's greatest source of wealth is salmon fishing.
That's from a documentary made in the days when Alaska counted its dollars in fish. Literally. And fish money wasn't adding up. Just a few years after statehood, the phrase fiscal crisis started to appear in local newspapers.
Back then, Tom Marshall, remember, he's the man with the whiskers in the small brown house, was working for Alaska's brand new state government. He remembers it being a pretty tense time.
We're on our own now. We're a state. And there was a great deal of anxiety of just how we're going to accomplish this.
But under the Statehood Act, Congress handed Alaska something like a scratch-off lottery ticket. Without really knowing what was there, the state could select over 100 million acres of federal land in its borders. And this is where I say what gets said about Alaska a lot. It's really big, twice the size of Texas. And even today, it's mostly wilderness. Millions and millions of acres of wilderness. So Alaska had an overwhelming amount of land to choose from. But the state also knew that if it picked land with valuable resources beneath it, ding, 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 that's a winning ticket.
This land would put us in a position to pay our bills.
That's when Marshall, a geologist with the state, quietly became Alaska's most important employee. He was in charge of picking the land. Based on his research, Marshall thought the best bet for Alaska was up north, way up north, along the Arctic coast, at a place called Prudhoe Bay. Before Marshall moved to Alaska, he worked as a petroleum geologist in the West. And in Prudhoe Bay, he saw echoes of big oil basins he'd seen in Wyoming. But in the end, Marshall admits it's really hard to figure out where oil is, especially in the Arctic.
When you do the geology of an area, you think this has possibilities. You don't come up with something like this is a dead cinch. I mean, if you do that, you're a fool.
When Marshall's boss passed along his recommendation to select a remote chunk of tundra on the icy ocean, Alaska's first governor, Bill Egan, was not impressed.
Governor Egan's comment was, doesn't he know it's frozen?
But oil companies like British Petroleum also told Egan they thought the land had potential. Egan chose Prudhoe Bay in 1964. But, and this is something Marshall will never forget, many skeptics still laughed off the idea that anything valuable would ever be found there. When the Prudhoe Bay selection was posted in the state's giant book of land ownership maps, someone scrawled a note across the page in 5-inch tall letters.
They wrote Marshall's Folly on there.
Marshall's Folly. That's how crazy some Alaskans thought he was. Geologists had been unsuccessfully looking for oil on the North Slope for decades.
Because the truth is, America's biggest oil field was really hard to find. How hard was it? We took a trip to a warehouse in Anchorage to help answer that question.
I'm Kurt.
Hi, I'm Zoe. Nice to meet you.
All right.
Imagine a Sam's Club. It actually is an old Sam's Club, but instead of shelves packed with jars of peanut butter and cases of Pop-Tarts, they're stacked 6 feet high with plain brown boxes.
So yeah, we're a research, basically a library with 4 million pounds of rocks here.
This is the Geologic Materials Center. It holds some of Alaska's most important rocks. Geologist Kurt Johnson is kind of like the head librarian. We asked to see the box that holds the actual rocks from the actual first Prudhoe Bay well.
And so this is from the first well that led to the discovery of oil in Prudhoe Bay.
It's hard to get too excited about a box of rocks.
But then we ask, and this is the mind-blowing part, we asked to see the boxes from the wells they drilled before Prudhoe Bay, the wells that came up empty. And Johnson, in his understated way, gestures to three aisles. Really, they look more like canyons, filled with skinny boxes of rocks.
And so this is a small portion of what was drilled.
It's just box after box after box of wells in search of...
We have thousands of boxes and that were drilled before Prudhoe Bay.
So many boxes, and none of them struck oil, or at least enough oil.
So when parts of the North Slope were opened up for drilling, including the land Tom Marshall selected for the state, the oil industry was split. After so many dry wells, some companies thought looking for oil in Alaska's Arctic was a waste of time.
But then there were a handful of companies that thought the oil was still out there to find.
There's a story that during a plane trip over Alaska in the 1950s, a BP geologist looked down at the Brooks Range and suddenly realized the landscape below him was strikingly similar to the Zagros Mountains in Iran. Those mountains sit on some of the biggest oil fields in the world.
And when it came to Alaska, oil companies had to think Zagros big. To explain why, we'll introduce you to a bona fide oil man. He's 92 and retired today, but back in the 1960s, Harry Jameson supervised oil exploration in Alaska for ARCO. And like everyone in the oil industry, Jameson's focus was on the bottom line.
A major oil field discovery at that time was considered to be 100 million barrels. You go up to Alaska and 100 million barrels on the North Slope is literally worth nothing.
The cost of getting the oil to market from the North Slope would be astronomical. To justify that, Jameson says they knew they had to find at least a billion barrels.
And so that made it quite a long shot.
If a billion barrels of oil was hidden anywhere in North America, Jameson and his colleagues at ARCO thought the North Slope was the place to find it. The Arctic's alluring geology drew in a handful of other companies, too. Soon, ARCO, Humble Oil, Sinclair, BP, and Union Oil were all laying plans to drill in the Arctic.
But looking for oil in the Arctic is nothing like looking for oil in the lower 48. The North Slope is like a different planet. North of the Brooks Range, it's mostly endless tundra, No mountains, no forests, just a flat expanse dotted with little ponds. In the winter, the temperature hovers around 30 below, and the sun never rises. There were no roads, of course, so the huge drill rigs had to be cut into pieces and flown in on military planes. Jameson says it was like mounting a small invasion.
And it wasn't long before dreams of a massive oil field started to seem far-fetched. Jameson says the bad news started when BP and Sinclair teamed up and drilled 6 wells near the Brooks Range.
And all 6 were dry.
Another company tried drilling a well farther north.
That also was a dry hole.
Then, Jameson's company Arco sunk more than $4 million into a well.
The Susie well, 60 miles south of Prudhoe, and that was a dry hole.
The oil companies were hemorrhaging money with no returns.
Yeah, it was extremely discouraging. It's pretty hard back in those times. Remind you, you're in the middle 60s to cough up $5 million for another long shot in this remote area. So the whole industry was really down on the North Slope by that time.
The companies were thinking about giving up. If they did, Jameson thinks they may not have returned to Prudhoe Bay for decades.
Decades. But there was one last oil rig left on the North Slope, and Jameson was convinced that Prudhoe Bay's geology was just too promising to walk away. In 1967, Arco and Humble Oil moved the rig to the land Tom Marshall insisted on picking for the state. That became Prudhoe Bay State Well Number 1.
On a flight to check out the well right before Christmas, Jameson remembers looking out the window of the plane.
And you don't see anything. I mean, it's absolutely black. And it's not just remote and dark and cold, but it's downright dangerous.
One of the guys waiting for Jameson at that last ditch well was a young field geologist named Gil Mull. A few years before, Jameson had given Mull his dream job, flying around the North Slope searching for rocks with oil potential. Usually, more experienced geologists work oil wells. But at the last minute, a guy who was supposed to be at Prudhoe Bay took a different job. So Mull ended up spending Christmas 1967 on the North Slope.
Mull says drilling the well wasn't that exciting at first.
Almost like watching grass grow.
It's a months-long process to drill a test well. Mull spent weeks poring over rock cuttings slowly unearthed by the drillers, studying them for signs of oil. Little by little, the team started to feel like they were onto something. Eventually, they tested the well's pressure.
Usually what happens is you open the valve, and you get... So on this drill stem test, open the valve and it's an immediate flow of gas to the surface. It sounded like a jet plane overhead. It's shaking the rig. It's a rumble. It's a roar.
The crews ignited the gas flowing out of the pipe. Mull remembers it sparked a 50-foot flare that burned in the darkness of the North Slope sky for over 8 hours.
Finding a lot of gas was a good sign, but the crew still didn't know exactly how much oil was there. So, a few months later, the companies drilled a second well, and that gave them all the proof they needed.
Oil at the North Slope. Oil at Alaska's North Slope at Prudhoe Bay. A lot of it. Possibly the biggest discovery in history.
Jameson started getting calls from reporters all over the world. Everyone wanted to know about Alaska's big oil discovery.
Time and Life and Reader's Digest and San Francisco Chronicle, Dallas, New York. And then we started getting interest even from people like the United Nations.
Initial estimates were that Prudhoe Bay held 9.6 billion barrels of oil. At the time, it was the biggest oil discovery in North America.
It's still the largest ever found in the U.S., rivaling many of the vast fields in the Middle East. Jameson says he still has a hard time explaining how big Prudhoe Bay is.
If you're not in the industry and not familiar with numbers of that sort, it's sort of like talking about the national debt. It blows your mind because you have no frame of reference.
It was so big that it wasn't a question of if a pipeline could be built to carry the oil to market, but when.
And Alaskans started to realize things would never be the same. That included Governor Bill Egan, the man who thought Tom Marshall was crazy to suggest picking Prudhoe Bay in the first place.
Alaska has become established as America's greatest oil province. Ponder for a moment the promise, the dream, and the touch of destiny.
Alaska was transformed from a struggling new state to a powerhouse fueled by oil.
Of course, Tom Marshall hoped that Alaska would find oil at Prudhoe Bay, but no one dreamed that the mega oil field beneath his selection would funnel billions of dollars into Alaska's coffers for decades to come. When I ask Marshall about that, he's quick to brush it off. He tells me he was just doing his job. But that's not to say he doesn't get any satisfaction out of it. The whole Marshall's folly thing doesn't bother you anymore.
The what?
The whole Marshall's folly thing doesn't bother you anymore.
Oh, not at all. You know, because it's so wrong. And I mean, you know, let's face it. Prudhoe Bay oil field was the largest oil field ever discovered in the North American continent. I mean, you know, why should I feel bad about that?
Finding Prudhoe Bay came down to a lot of things going right.
If it weren't for Tom Marshall selecting the land,
if they hadn't decided to drill that one last well,
if there wasn't enough oil,
so much about Alaska as we know it today would be completely different. Oil money wouldn't have flooded the state, paying for schools, infrastructure, and even a yearly check for every Alaskan. The state's economy may not have turned upside down when oil prices crashed in the 1980s, and the Exxon Valdez oil spill probably wouldn't have happened.
But before all that, Alaska had to build the pipeline. And for that to happen, the state had to reckon with its past. The pipeline would cut through land where Alaska Native people had lived for millennia, and they were formally claiming that land as their own.
Next time on Midnight Oil, how Alaska's oil find led to a civil rights landmark and launched a social experiment in the far north. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Midnight Oil. Our story was edited by Annie Feit and Jennifer Pemberton and mixed by Dave Waldron. James Glaves composed our theme music. We had help from Zechariah Hughes and Emily Kwong.
And thanks to the Alaska Film Archives at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Our media producer extraordinaire is Eric Keto. He interviewed a few of the folks who live and work along the pipeline today. This week, he'll introduce you to Les Dunbar, the postal clerk at the Prudhoe Bay Post Office. Check out that video and more at alaskapublic.org.